whatevs. Is it raining tomorrow? Hey Siri, is it raining tomorrow?
Oh my god, no. Stop.
Can't ride your bike when it rains. Well, you can. Ill-advised, because you break your teeth like I did.
Yeah, god.
But can you tell?
That was so scary. No.
It was scary for you, scary for me.
Yeah, no.
So how do we want to start?
Welcome.
Is this for a little jingle?
Let's do some recording.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting, isn't it?
With the aim assess.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting.
Test 1, 2.
Aim assess.
3.
Hello, mate.
Hello. All right.
It's been a while.
It's been so long. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Catch Up with the AMSS.
Season 2. And we're not just calling it season 2 because we've missed a few months. You know, this is new us, new podcast, new semester.
New semester. We're here. We're loving it.
All right.
I've really missed my time chatting shit on here. And as per usual, we're like, been here sitting here for a while, like lost the plot kind of.
I think it's in the script. We've lost the script.
We've lost the script.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Everything that you're about to hear for the next half hour is completely
ad-lib.
Yeah.
Now
we're super excited. We're gonna launch you off with a bit of catch up with the AMSS and such as, well, we're gonna talk through the big month we have ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of the big month.
Yeah.
The month is so big that we'd be talking for the whole episode otherwise. But jam-packed month. And then we've got an excellent Ed Corner plan for you.
Mm-hmm.
Target the first year's new case, type 1 diabetes, and
also,
a bit of
extension. The extension is really relevant for third years and fifth years. Mm-hmm. The DKA case, spoilers, and peds. So we're going to look at DKA from a pediatric perspective and how you manage that in the acute setting. So, catch up. What's coming up for the AMSS?
What's that new sound?
It's whatever this is. I'm just going to put it in right here. Now.
Wow!
Yep, we don't know what it is.
Wow.
Surprise for me, surprise for you. Okay.
Okay, what's coming up? Oh, wait, you can do it.
Well, I have here, I mean, ad lib. We're starting off with the International Food Fiesta on the 20th of August, run by our very own international officers, Bobby and Adeline. It's going to be amazing. I love IFF is actually, you know, one of those like underrated events.
Yeah.
That debating. But IFF, you go in, you have your ticket of like 4 meals you can have plus a drink, and you just walk around with all this amazing food and you can't get enough. So you buy another 4 tickets and you have like 8 plates of food.
It's so good. And like,
no, that's lit. I can't wait for it. It's going to be a good time.
Amazing time. And then we've got AMSS Health and Wellbeing Week from the 23rd to the 27th of August.
Oof.
Huge week. They've got some amazing, amazing plans. Shout out to Namrata, Josie, Laura, and Yunina.
Yeah. What are the highlights? So you got something every day, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Monday.
There's like a lunch collab with philanthropy to raise some money. Okay. Yoga. And of course the big committee meeting as well. So this is the big one, SGM. We're making big changes to the regs and bylaws. And then we're voting for Patrons Plate, so make sure to come along. It's always like a big compliment fest. It's very cute.
It is the most wholesome meeting of the year.
Yeah.
By far.
Without a doubt.
Tuesday.
The girls have organized a fantastic sexual health workshop in the evening.
Brilliant.
More to be announced very soon.
Wednesday.
Puppies. At the HMS. And there's also cooking with Yunina from MasterChef.
Wow. B-O-Nina.
B-O-Nina Yang.
Yo-Yo. Well, she was actually Yo-Yo on the show.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry.
Thursday.
We've got an Ed Forum about women in leadership. And it's organized by two of our lovely Ed Forum conveners, Lena and Raf. And they've organized some incredible, incredible speakers. We haven't revealed them yet, so I can't say anything at the moment, but it is really exciting.
Exciting. And Lena and Raf, they are women themselves.
Thank you for that. But it's not just for women, it's for everyone.
Friday.
We have our inaugural Medverse Dent Dodgeball event. Very exciting. Everyone can get around it. And thank you to the lovely sports officers as well as AUDSS for getting this underway. Get your friendly but competitive hats on.
So like dentistry students learn any skills in their university course that would give them an edge in dodgeball? I'm just trying to think.
They would be able to repair their teeth after they get smashed. otherwise.
Yeah, probably not anything else, you know, so.
I feel like the dent students have a really good understanding of teeth. The head and neck. Perhaps they will.
But it's out of bounds. You can't hit someone's head and neck.
No, but you can learn to manipulate the muscles in your head and neck to intimidate the opponent.
Yeah. Heard it here first, folks. Huge week of stuff. Lots of things to be excited about. Personally, I'm excited for it all, but patrons play committee meeting. I can never get over. It's going to be a really emotional one because all my friends are going to be the ones being voted on and I'm not being part of them. So I get to just harp on about all my friends the entire night.
That's so cute.
Get there, talk about the people who have affected and made good change in your med career over the last 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Let's get on to Ed Corner.
Bidding, bidding. New jingle? Should we do a new jingle?
Oh.
Because we got feedback that we need a new jingle.
Did we?
Yes.
Oh, that's so sad. Also, just before the jingle, quick fire agenda.
Oh, please, yes.
Take it away.
Right. What is diabetes? What is diabetes mellitus? What's the difference between type 1 and type 2? There are actually more types than type 1 and type 2.
Yeah, yep.
In Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I think Scully says he has like type 34 diabetes. So I don't think that exists. Anyway.
I love how we're always back to Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, look. But we're going to quickly go through the pathogenesis, what it actually means to have type 1 diabetes, and then why you might present in a certain way. And one of those presentations being diabetic ketoacidosis, which we'll cover with the acute management in a pediatric setting. But it does, you know, principles apply to adult medicine as well. Cool?
Cool.
Here comes a new jingle. We have no clue what it's going to be.
It's Ed Corner.
And we're back. We're recording. We're back. Okay.
Testing. 1, 2.
Diabetes. Give me the etymology of diabetes. I'm not searching. Is it something to do with sweet? Sweet, sweet.
Yeah, yes. Mellitus means honey. So like melon. Yes, so yes, it's like sweet like honey because I think it was like
to do with
the pee was sweet or something like that. Like you'd pee out all your sugar and then it smelt sweet. Mm. So
back in the day.
I don't know what diabetes comes from though.
Yeah, before we had blood glucose monitoring and testing, doctors would diagnose diabetes mellitus by seeing if there was ants around someone's pee or just by tasting the urine. And, you know, sometimes...
IFF, everyone.
Yeah, IFF for all of those from the culture of older medicine. That's what's going to be served up.
Oh. Yeah. Maybe that could be our vulgar. New noise.
Anyway, so diabetes mellitus, the mellitus referring to high sugars in the urine and therefore you would expect in the blood as well. And so that's what that term's referring to. But it's an umbrella term for a group of diseases and the main defining component is that high blood glucose level chronically causing a number of complications. So there's mainly two types, type 1 and type 2, and Satch's going to talk us through what type 1 is.
Yeah, so type 1 is where... you have an autoimmune destruction of the pancreas that results in absolute insulin deficiency.
Yeah. So traditionally, if you see a young kid with diabetes mellitus, that's typically type 1. There's blurred lines now and there's different subtypes. There's different subtypes of diabetes mellitus that cross over and you can have adults developing type 1 later in life as well.
Mm-hmm.
But this is your classic. You see someone with an insulin pump, you see someone testing their sugars in school, they usually have type 1 diabetes mellitus.
Yeah, exactly right. And essentially that big mouthful of a sentence is that your body develops antibodies against its own pancreas. And these specifically affect the insulin-producing cells in your pancreas, which are the beta cells in the islet of Langerhans. Since insulin normally works to lower your blood glucose and you're no longer synthesizing it as you should because the cells are being destroyed, you end up hypoglycemic with high BGLs. So basically in type 1, your body creates autoantibodies that attack the cells that create insulin for you. And since they're not creating insulin, you get an absolute insulin deficiency.
Cool. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Like you apply it to like a club setting, you know, the club thinks that the bouncers are actually bad and they start kicking out the bouncers as well. But now the bouncers can't control the high glucose, which is the troublemakers in the club. And then you just hit a whole bunch of complications.
You lost me at club because I haven't been in one since COVID restrictions. So I just got sad.
Yeah, sorry. Completely unrelatable analogy. Anyway.
This contrasts with type 2, though.
Yes.
So that's where you get a relative insulin deficiency. Hui, tell us about it.
All right. So type 1 diabetes contrasts to type 2 in the way that type 2 is about a relative insulin deficiency. So what this means is, you know, we talked about type 1, you cannot produce or release any insulin because your beta cells are destroyed. In type 2, it's not the same thing. So you don't necessarily have a destruction of your beta cells. You don't necessarily have an absence of insulin. It's that the effect or the ability for that insulin to control your blood sugar is some way dysregulated or out of whack. Maybe that's to do with the way your GLUT4 sensors are responding to sugars, or maybe that's due to accumulation of different factors over time. But for a number of these reasons, including risk factors like obesity, metabolic syndrome, diet, exercise, family history to a certain extent, and also genetics, you develop this resistance over time.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is your classic kind of thing you might see in an older patient. So for example, if you have a family member that's about 50 years old, maybe they're a little bit overweight and they develop diabetes, type 2 is what you'll see in this case.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So essentially, in summary, diabetes mellitus is when you have high blood glucose levels chronically, pretty much. And type 1 is where you have an absolute insulin deficiency due to an autoimmune process.
Yep.
And then type 2 is a relative insulin deficiency. We can discuss type 2 in another episode.
That's a whole nother case.
Whole nother case, if not multiple.
Yeah.
But should we go through how type 1 usually occurs?
I guess the development of type 1 diabetes is sort of a perfect storm of events.
Yeah.
So the first thing you might think about is predisposing genes. So you might have a genetic risk to developing type 1 in the first place, and then you have some kind of environmental trigger. And what we usually think about in type 1 diabetes, and the classic example is something like a viral infection, where your body sees these viruses or parts of this virus, and this virus for some reason or another looks like your pancreatic beta cells. And so it produces antibodies against the virus, but at the same time, because your beta cells look the same, those antibodies attack your beta cells, your pancreatic cells, at the same time. Okay. So at first you won't notice this because you have lots of beta cells that produce lots of insulin, but over time, as more and more beta cells are yeeted from these antibodies, you start to develop that absolute insulin deficiency until there's a lack of insulin enough to affect your blood sugar levels to have a first presentation.
Yeah, exactly right. And can you talk us through a bit about first presentation?
Yeah, so there's like lots of different presentations you might see. For example, when I was in primary school, one of my classmates was just really sleepy for a week. And then we found out at the end of the week that she had type 1 diabetes. And that's a classic example. But often we'll think about the three polys.
Yeah.
So, do you want to chat through that?
Yeah, sure. So you have your polyuria, polydipsia, and polyphagia. So polyuria, you pee a lot. Polyurine, lots of urine. Polydipsia, you want to drink heaps of water, you're very thirsty. So it's pretty much about being very thirsty. And then polyphagia, you want to eat heaps because you're not taking in that insulin, you're not taking in and uptaking the requirements that your body needs. And so it pretty much goes into this state where it's like, I need more energy, I need more food.
Yeah, because your cells aren't getting that sugar and therefore it thinks that you're starving yourself.
Yeah.
Which exactly. I guess you technically you are.
Yeah, yeah.
In your body.
And along those same lines, you do get weight loss over time.
Mm-hmm.
And those cells not getting the glucose that it needs for the energy is also kind of why you get that fatigue as well.
Yeah. So you probably will see a mixture of these five main symptoms. So quickly cover them again. Peeing a lot, being really thirsty, being really hungry, having weight loss, and also being very fatigued at the same time. Put that in conjunction with a kid as well. Someone under 16, for example, is mm-hmm. your classic presentation. But there is another key presentation of type 1 diabetes that's super, super important for everyone to know. So what is that?
Diabetic ketoacidosis.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very bad. And essentially, you have uncontrolled ketone production and uncontrolled blood glucose levels. And then that leads to a bunch of symptoms and complications, which we'll go into now.
Yeah. So quickly, just so you guys know what the presentation might look like for diabetic ketoacidosis, you might see a mixture of these five other symptoms, but on top of that, there might be losing consciousness, having abdominal pain, getting really nauseated, vomiting, their breathing might start to be affected. So it's not very specific, but if you see a really sick kid, this could be DKA.
Yeah, they look very ill and very obviously ill.
Yeah. So why is DKA so bad, Satch?
Well, it's kind of like the Australia pediatric complications. Everything wants to kill you. So in terms of complications, you can get cerebral edema.
Swelling of the brain.
Swelling of the brain, yep. Severe metabolic acidosis. Mm-hmm. So your body goes into an acidotic state. Electrolyte imbalances. And because electrolytes are so important in the way your heart functions, that can lead to arrhythmias.
Yeah.
And, you know, the list goes on, but those are what we're trying to prevent when we're looking at our principles of management and the order that we do that in or the priorities that we have.
Yeah. So we're going to approach this from a pediatric setting, but these principles apply to the adult setting as well. So we're looking at the ABCs of DKA.
Please go through them for us.
This is not a very legit mnemonic, as you guys might know from season one of the show, but I'm going to do it anyway. So A. for aqua, as in water.
Mm-hmm.
B for banana salt, as in potassium.
Love it.
C for ketosis.
With a C.
And acidosis.
Love it.
And lastly, D for don't look away. So we're going to blast through each of these quickly. I'm talking about the principles of management of DKA from a pediatric perspective. So starting with A for aqua. What are we doing with aqua?
Aqua is correcting your fluids. Why? Because kids with DKA are dehydrated. So what you want to do is you want to start with a bolus aqua. So you bowl big bunch of fluids, pretty much. You replace what's been lost and then you maintain that fluid state.
Yeah. So pediatric fluids is a whole nother episode and it's definitely something you will cover in fifth year. But for now, know that those are the three things that you consider in that order. So bolus, replacement, and then maintenance of fluid.
Great. All right. Second, we're on to B for banana salt or potassium.
Yeah. So
take us through it.
Well, at the same time that you're replacing fluids, you're also thinking about the electrolytes. And one of the ones we care about most is potassium. So why that is because it's generally, it is bad if your salts are out of alignment and especially bad if potassium is out of alignment because it can quickly and severely affect your heart like we talked about before. Funnily enough, banana salt or potassium equilibrium is very sensitive to insulin and in fact, insulin naturally helps to move potassium into cells. So without that insulin, so remembering in type 1 diabetes, you have that absolute insulin deficiency. Salt is moving out from your cells into the blood. You lose that salt and you end up in this weird situation where if you measure your blood, it looks like you have high potassium, but in your cells, you actually have low potassium. So in pediatrics, you obviously want to measure the blood potassium early via VBG. And this is when you start to think about maintenance fluid and starting a potassium chloride infusion with those maintenance fluids. Generally, the rule of thumb here in pediatrics is to start that infusion and have a look at how the potassium levels respond. And you just titrate to try and get the potassium level in the normal range.
Yeah. And, you know, with all of this management, just important when you administer whatever you're doing, then you monitor how that's going and then adjust it accordingly.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing here is if you're really worried about the potassium level, you can do an ECG of the heart to see if there are any changes obvious on that. Yeah. Quick note as well on sodium. So that's another electrolyte that can be kind of deranged in DKA. Just be aware that if you have a high glycemic level, so a high sugar level in your blood, that can make it look like you have a low sodium. But this is a fake or pseudo hypernatremia. So you need to correct for that using the correct formulas.
Yeah, great.
All right, easy. So next, C for ketosis and acidosis.
Love it. Basically, we need to reverse both of these. And the best way to do that is with insulin. Mm-hmm. So if we sort of revise back, DKA happens when you have the absolute insulin deficiency.
So why would you have this? Say a patient has type 1 diabetes and they're diagnosed. Mm-hmm. Why would they come in with DKA if you're giving them insulin on a daily basis?
Yeah, so essentially what happens here is, so you can have low insulin levels for whatever reason, and things that can alter that can be if you miss an insulin dose, mm-hmm. which can be common, if you get sick as well. They're the, you know, two most common causes of
absolutely
of that. And essentially when you have that low insulin level, then your way that your body will metabolize that glucose is different. So you end up having uncontrolled lipolysis, so the breakdown of fats. And then they are free. So you have free fatty acids. But then the liver is like, nah, not free. So they kill them and then they form ketone bodies. And these ketones, which is an essential feature of DKA.
It's in the name.
Diabetic ketoacidosis. This is what's dangerous and is causing the metabolic acidosis. So that acid state in your body.
Yeah. And on top of that, without the insulin, you can't control glucose either. So you also have a high sugar level, but that's separate to the ketones. So the sugar is causing the dehydration, but the ketones are causing the acidosis.
Yeah. And they're the two, you know, really big points in DKA. So it goes without saying, you stop the source by giving the patient the source,
as in
S-A-U-S. Wait, I can't even spell.
It's written there.
So it goes without saying, stop the source by giving the patient the source, as in
yeah.
S-A-U-C-E, as in insulin.
Yeah.
So we usually give this as an infusion added to sodium chloride. So yeah, I'm just going to say that.
Cool.
It's because they said we usually give this as an insulin added to
it. Yeah. So in pediatrics, the rule of thumb is 0.1 units per kilogram per hour of insulin infusion in sodium chloride.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. So this is generally stopped. The ketosis and the acidosis is generally stopped by the insulin infusion as you stop that ketone formation. But Sach, what happens or what do you do if you don't see that pH normalizing after doing a couple arterial blood gases?
Well, if it's not normalizing, then something is seriously wrong and you need to consider ICU. So that's intensive care, and correcting the pH with something like bicarbonate. Or more likely, there's a secondary process going on like a sepsis. So as I mentioned before, an infective process or infection can cause you to have that low insulin level that leads to DKA. So basically at this point, hopefully you've already called for help and someone senior is able to make that decision. And, you know, that goes back to when you're doing your primary survey, the key things that you're doing even before you get to the A is asking for help, figuring out and sending out for help.
Yeah. Okay. So the last
point.
So we've done A, we've done B, we've done C. Now we have D for the management of DKA, and that's for don't look away. Don't look away.
So, you have lost the plot, literally.
So for this, we're thinking about complications that can arise over the next couple hours for this patient. And so remember, cash money if you monitor correctly. And that's another acronym for C, cerebral edema, A aspiration, S sugars, and H hyper and hypokalemia and natremia.
Right. Okay. So C for cerebral edema. What would you see usually with patients like that?
Yeah. So cerebral edema, just to quickly recap again, is when there's swelling or edema in the brain. And this is really bad because this can progress really quickly. But what you might see in a patient early on is a headache, some irritability, lethargy, some vomiting. And over the next, you know, minutes to hours, you might start to see depressed consciousness. You might even start to see seizures. And then at the very late stage, you start to see things like a really low heart rate, a really high blood pressure, and the patient's not going to be able to breathe very easily.
Yeah, very freaky. What are we going to do? Call for help.
This is huge. So
huge.
You need, if a patient is admitted for DKA, everyone on that ward needs to be monitoring and aware of the symptoms and signs of cerebral edema so we can call for help and give mannitol very quickly. And mannitol is this drug that helps with brain swelling, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Cool. So C, cerebral edema. A of CASH is for aspiration, and we mostly care about this when the patient has an altered level of consciousness. So sometimes DKA patients come in, they're really drowsy, they're really lethargic, and this might lead to aspiration in some cases where they start to aspirate their own saliva or maybe some vomit down the windpipe. And so This is really important to monitor as well.
Yeah, and then so you've got C for cerebral edema, A for aspiration, S for sugars. So mainly you're looking at low glucose, hypoglycemia. So you want to check the blood glucose frequently because you're giving that insulin in. Mm-hmm. And so your body's response to that is obviously to lower your body's response to that is that your body will lower the blood glucose levels. So you just need to make sure you're checking that frequently and ensuring that they're not getting their levels too low.
Yeah, because that's equally as bad if you have very low sugars.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing with that as well is that some of the signs that you'd see with hypoglycemia might be the signs that you can see in cerebral edema. And so, you know, that's where all that monitoring comes in, where you're just wanting to look for all of these things and, you know, get help and use this algorithm even to manage it.
Yeah. And so the last letter, H in CASH, is for hyper and hypokalemia natremia. And this is kind of along the same lines as the sugars. You are correcting the electrolytes, and at the same time, you know the electrolytes have been deranged. So regularly check those levels of potassium and sodium via a VBG or venous blood gas. Okay, so that should be fairly frequently that you're checking these levels.
Great. Okay.
Very nice.
Should we summarize?
Yep.
Kid with DKA, go A, B, C, D.
A for aqua, so start those fluids ASAP.
B for banana salt. Potassium, take that VBG, venous blood gas, correct the potassium and sodium if needed.
C for ketosis and acidosis, two of the worst things in this condition. So start an insulin infusion to stop the source and reverse these processes. Consider escalating if the pH doesn't respond.
And D for don't look away. Admit, get help, and monitor these kids for CASH, cerebral edema, aspiration, sugars being low, and hyper and hypokalemia or natremia.
Nice. This is bread and butter, peds.
Yeah.
And also you'll cover it in first and third year as well for the preclins.
And really fourth year too.
Yeah. Bread and butter fourth year. And also, you know, just being a doctor is very important to know how
good
to manage
for the 60
DKA.
Years.
You know what? Everyone should know this. This should be taught in schools. Year one, year two, maybe. schools.
General blood glucose management.
Alongside addition, you should also know how to do DKA management. Because it could save some lives. You could save a life.
So now we got to go actually revise the national curriculum. So I guess we will leave you with this podcast.
Wait, the national curriculum for DKA? Or adding DKA to the
adding DKA to the curriculum.
Yeah, yeah. My mum's a teacher, so we have an in.
We have an in. This is great.
Let me go home.
Thank you for joining us today. As usual, we'd like to thank our major sponsors, Mega Perks and AMA.
Perks, AMA.
For your ongoing support.
Thank you for your ongoing support in these trying times.
In these, what is he? In these challenging and
unprecedented
times.